the Diaries of a Diet podcast with Danny Fennessy. Kia ora, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of Doad. I'm Danny Fennessy, and in this episode, man, you know what? When I was sussing through people I wanted to get on Doad Season 2, this person was high in the priority list. Chenille Lau, was so grateful when they were available to come. And I'll tell you what, I think I learned more in the 40 minutes I spent with them than I have in about the last 5-10 years of my life. And I tried to keep up with the conversation, but they're just so smart, so smart and very, very wise, very knowledgeable. So make sure you're somewhere safe and take in this. It is a lot of information, but I think it is very, very important. They're the founder of In Conversion Therapy New Zealand. If you don't know what conversion therapy is, you are about to find out. And it is something that is happening right here in Aotearoa that I just cannot believe. You actually might have seen, you might have signed something, the In Conversion Therapy bill that has been going around social media the last 6 months. I learned something in this episode that you're probably going to learn as well. Signing things that you might not even know what you're signing. T's and C's. All about T's and C's. See, I've got a politic friend now. The politician friend. Is that what you call it? See, this is why I don't do politics. Anyway, I'm just going to call Chenille up and be like, is this what I'm signing? Anyway, make sure you're somewhere safe. You're probably seeing them on social media speaking about important things, which we're going to touch on, like the Pride Parade video that has gone viral. And just a whole lot of super smart things. All right, so just relax and enjoy. Honestly, I just want to say thank you so much for coming here today to Doad. It's an honour. When I reached out to you on your Instagram, I was like, oh, there's no chance. Like, they're not going to write back to me. Like, I'm going to get lost in the DMs. I didn't think so. And then when you wrote back, I was just like, I appreciate it because I see everything you're doing in the community and I appreciate it. So thank you so much for being here first and foremost.
Morena, thank you for having me.
Founder of In Conversion Therapy New Zealand. I know that you're a massive advocate of that. How is that going? Could you please explain it for everybody that's listening? Because when I bring up conversion therapy to people, they're like, what is that? I don't understand. It's amazing how many people don't know about conversion therapy. So in your words, explain.
A lot of people do believe that conversion therapy is a thing of the past, and it's unfortunate that it is not a thing of the past. In 2019, I went to Youth Parliament and I was talking about conversion therapy, and you just look around the room and people were shocked to hear that this was even a thing. Mm-hmm. But the way that I realized that conversion therapy was a thing is that I was volunteering at the Middlemore Hospital in 2017, right? And it was the summer, so it was really hot. So this guy, leader of a church, walks up to me and he tries to pray my gay away. So when I say no, he looks at me and he says, it's hot, but you know what's hotter? Hell. I know, right?
Wait,
and I was like,
is this at a hospital?
It's at a hospital, at the Middlemore Hospital reception. Can you believe that this guy walks into a hospital where all these medical things are happening and tries to offer the pseudoscientific treatment? And so in that moment, I was like, this happens in New Zealand. And so I researched it, and there were no laws in this country, in Aotearoa, stopping conversion therapy from happening. So I started advocating to end it. And I mean, for those who don't understand what conversion therapy is, it is any practice that aims to eliminate or suppress or change an LGBTQIA+ orientation to cis and het.
I could not believe that that is legal anywhere in the world, but even here in Aotearoa, you can get therapy for your sexuality. Like, people want to change that about, even like how you said, there was a man that didn't know you from a bar of soap and he walked up to you and was like, I'm going to pray the gay away. Mm-hmm. And that is happening. And you know, when you said, you were like, can you believe that? Is it sad to say, yeah, I do believe that a man came up to you and said that. But we're making moves, aren't we? You're making moves. We have Jacinda, Labour. Do you want to explain what's happening with the moves? Because the last that I checked with the signatures, I signed that. I wish I could sign it a million times, but...
Yeah, it's a complicated situation to say the least. In 2018, there were two petitions submitted to Parliament to end conversion therapy. The government did not do any work leading up to this year, and I am not certain that they have started the work. I am hearing that they have, but there's nothing to suggest that they have. So in that period of time, they didn't actually do the work, and now we are in a circumstance, we are in a situation where we want to get it done quickly, but we want to get it right. Yeah. And this is a very complex issue, and it needs a very nuanced law. We can't just say, let's ban conversion therapy and that will end it. Banning conversion therapy is not the same as ending it. And the Labour Party said that they would end conversion therapy. Now, just think about a situation where we've banned conversion therapy, but no one is actually coming out and saying, I'm being put into conversion therapy. No one is holding these service providers accountable. Then the ban doesn't work because no one is actually trying to find out who these people are. Take a young, vulnerable person, for example, living with their parents, and the parents are saying, yeah, you go to conversion therapy. And if that person is young and brown and trans, they probably won't call the police and say, hey, yeah, I'm being put into conversion therapy. They'll just silently suffer. What we also know is that young ethnic queer people have a preference to stay with their family. They yes, don't want to tear yeah, their family apart. Mm-hmm. So if they're being put into conversion therapy, they won't come and publicly say that, hey, my parents are putting me into conversion therapy, because that will potentially tear their family apart. There's another circumstance. Take an immigrant family, for example, living in Aotearoa.
Yes.
Maya Lubeck's bill that proposed to ban conversion therapy would make it a criminal offence to remove anyone from this country to practice conversion therapy, right? So take an immigrant family, the parents are removing this young person to go practice conversion therapy in another country, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if the young person speaks out, their parents get convicted of a criminal offence. That family gets deported from this country.
Wow.
That young person goes with them.
Wow.
Then they can go and do whatever they want in their country. So this is a much more complex issue than just simply banning it. And the unfortunate reality is that the Minister of Justice and the Ministry of Justice are making no genuine effort to consult the community. So these are views that they may not be aware of. And we're trying to tell them, we're trying to help them, but they are not taking our health.
It's all those little T's and C's that you see at the bottom, is it? Because I'm sitting here and I'm like, wait, what? I'm confused, because what was ending in 2022? What are they? That's what I've been seeing everywhere. I thought it was being banned, conversion therapy. Is that true, or is it?
Well, they are only banning conversion therapy, so it would be a legal ban.
But it's not ending conversion therapy.
It's not the same as ending
conversion therapy.
Gosh. So imagine you've got a criminal offence, right?
Yes.
What you want to do is divert people from doing it at all.
Yes.
You want to end the practice so no one is doing it. You don't want to create a criminal offence so that when people do it, you can convict them. That's not what we should be aiming for. We need more deterrence in terms of education. We need to allow people to understand that this practice is so bad that they shouldn't do it. There is some work being done around it, but it's so Pākehā-based. So there's lots of queer-positive information that educates people. So we're diverting white people from committing these crimes, but then we're allowing ethnic communities, black people, people of colour, Māori and Pacific people to commit those crimes because we're not diverting them. So the criminal offence is disproportionately going to start affecting people of colour in this country while we are diverting white people away from it. It's so more nuanced, as we were saying, that we need education to ensure that people know what this is and why they shouldn't do it. What we also need is concentrated resources for survivors and victims and their families. So even if they've put someone into conversion therapy, they are able to heal from this. Because we know that conversion therapy is a traumatic experience.
Have you experienced it for yourself?
My experience is very different because it was in Fiji, and in Fiji you don't even have the proper vocabulary to communicate your sexuality or gender orientation. So in Fiji there were no proper terms, so the only ones that existed was derogatory terms and the slurs. And a lot of the times what was happening to me was unspoken. So you wouldn't really know that it was conversion therapy until you grow up and you realize, oh, they were stopping me from being feminine, or they were stopping me from being who I am. And a lot of the times it included prayers and wearing weird voodoo things. I mean, Fiji is girl full of black magic.
Really? Well, yeah, sorry for my ignorance. I've never been before. I don't really know the culture so well, so I don't want to be like culture insensitive. If you share with us,
my next door neighbor was a voodoo queen.
Like a legit voodoo?
Yeah,
like,
I'm not joking.
Share, like, what do you mean? What happened?
She used to do black magic, girl. They would like have lemons and chilies and needles, all of those things.
Would you like sit in a circle or something?
No, I wouldn't do it. They would just do their own practices, and she wasn't the person doing it to me, but then you just see like the community was trying to actively erase queer identities. I mean, at some point, and I think that we can extend the idea of conversion therapy to include abuse. Like there were trans people in my community who were being spat on from the bus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I bet. Yeah. How? Yeah. What's the kind of percentage of the queer community in Fiji? Like, is it quite?
You could not tell because, I mean, for very long it was a criminal offense. People were getting convicted for it. And it is still a taboo. You don't talk about it because although it's not a criminal offense, people are going to beat you up. And in some circumstances, they kill you. I mean, 2 years ago on the International Day Against Transphobia, a trans woman was killed in Fiji so transphobic people could make a point. So even if you were queer, you wouldn't come out and overtly say it. So you couldn't possibly get stats. I mean, a few years ago, we found out that about 10% of the population is queer. I would say that many, many more people are queer.
Is this in Fiji?
No, it was just an American study.
American study, yeah. Okay. And what about you in particular? Like, did you always know that, like, what kind of age were you like, wow, I know that I'm queer, like, I want to feel, because you would have been, that would have been horrible, that would have been so scary living in that and having to hide your identity. Like, what kind of age were you feeling those feelings where you knew that you were, but you just couldn't be? You couldn't be yourself.
Mm.
Or were you unsure of what you really were because no one around you was?
Yeah.
Like that?
I mean, for me, I think one of the large issues were that there were no proper terms to describe what I was feeling and who I am. So you couldn't possibly communicate it or understand it for yourself, but I always knew that I wasn't cis or het. I mean, it's weird because, I mean, at what age do straight people realize that they are straight and cis? It's a very difficult conversation because I think queer people just know that they are queer, but they just need to see other people like them to know that it can be a reality. I mean, from memory, I couldn't tell you what clicked in me and when I realized that I was queer, but I was very feminine. Yeah. So that kind of indicated to people that I was not the typical boy that they were looking for. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, actually, I'm not even a boy. I'm trans non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
So
what? Ta-da. Sorry, what are you?
Trans non-binary.
Trans non-binary. Do you want to explain what that is for people that are listening?
Because I think and a lot of people who are non-binary don't necessarily identify as trans, but for me, that I identify as trans non-binary largely because I'm not cis. So I don't go with he, him pronouns. I go with they, them pronouns. So that aspect of me is trans, and I'm non-binary in the sense that I don't identify with the two ends of the spectrum, which is she and he identifies they, them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's trans non-binary. And I think for some people, it doesn't make grammatical sense, but the entire English culture doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair point. And can we go back to your family? So how do they feel about you being trans non-binary? Are you like, you know, them coming from Fiji and from that culture? And
I mean, I don't think that they are accepting.
Oh, really? Is this like mum and dad?
It's not a topic of conversation ever.
Okay.
So we've never really talked about it. But there's also a part of me that refuses to talk about it and refuses to explain it to everyone because, I mean, I see myself as a trans non-binary person, as an ordinary person. These things are very ordinary parts of who I am, just as much as being brown. Now, if I sat my mother down and I was like, Mom, I hope you still love me.
Yeah.
I'm brown.
Yeah.
And Mom would go, anything but brown.
Yeah.
And she'd be like, oh my God, you've been hanging around with too many brown kids. They got you thinking that you're brown too.
Okay.
You know, so why do I have to explain to anyone that I'm trans non-binary? I mean, my sister is cisgender. She never had to explain that she's cisgender. So why do I have to? And I think that's a part of deconstructing the idea that being cis and heterosexual is the default.
That's some self-love. That's some self-love and some self-confidence. I love that. Like answer that you said, you're just like, well, I don't have to explain it to anyone. Like I am what I am. Like, you know, straight people don't have to go out there and be like, oh yeah, hi, my name is Danny and I'm straight. Like they don't ever have to do that.
Mm.
But I guess like when it comes to family and, you know, when the questions maybe start flowing and I don't know if you're close to your family or not, or if you still lived with them.
Mm.
I was just wondering if it was like ever a topic of conversation.
Yeah. I would say that I also recognize that there are a lot of communities that have been colonized and conditioned with homophobia and transphobia because you know that indigenous communities in the Pacific, Maori have Takatapui, the Fijians have the Vakasalewalewa and the Velasami Vakatangane, Samoans have Va'afafine, Tongans have Fakaleti, Hawaiians have Mahu. So all indigenous communities have queer identities that are very integral to their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we celebrated queer identities until colonialism happened and ruined quite literally everything. So I know that there are groups of people who have been conditioned with these ideas and they may need education and they may need a lot of empathy while we navigate these conversations. So sometimes I do allow it, but largely with the younger generation, because I feel like with the old generation, there's a feeling of hopelessness. It's just that they are at a stage where they are so old and they have so many issues to undo that homophobia and transphobia fall right to the bottom.
Yes.
Like my parents still haven't gotten their head around climate change, and I think, and I think
so
that
you're bringing in the trans non-binary, and then I was like, what?
Okay. I was like, sometimes I'd be like, oh my God, there's a flood, and my mom would be like, yeah, it rained. Of course, there's a flood. Oh. So like, you know, there's a lot of things for me to undo.
Yeah, I see.
And you have to prioritize some things. And I think the best way to undo homophobia and transphobia in the Pacific community is to start with the generation that are young. Because they still, there's a lot of education available now, and they're still very young and they haven't been conditioned as much.
Yeah. And they're curious. And I feel like they're very open books, and, you know, they want to ask questions. And, you know, for this podcast in particular, the first season that we did, it was quite interesting because a lot of the audience are the younger side. And I think they're just genuinely wanting to know. They want to know more. And these conversations are important. And, you know, there will be someone that's listening that is trans non-binary, and they'll be listening and be like, that's me. Like, wow, I can relate to that. And relatability for someone that is trying to figure out themselves, I feel, is really, really important. Whereas maybe the older generation, they're kind of already like, oh, I've lived those years. Like, I know who I am. Yeah. Like, I don't want to expand. I don't want to grow. I don't want to change in any kind of way. Whereas the youth is forever evolving. So that's what I find beautiful.
I just also feel that a lot of the times white people in this country don't understand that in brown families, to talk back to your parents is not a real thing. Mm-hmm. It's any form of debate or disagreement is seen as disrespect.
Yes.
And so it's very difficult to, one, navigate that, whereas how do you actually disagree with them and tell them that, hey, there's an alternative view, because they would see that as disrespect. So it's just layers and layers and layers of things that you need to undo before you can even have the conversation.
I couldn't even imagine talking back to my elders or anything like elders. Like you, I remember going to my friends' places when I was younger, you know, the Palangi kids. Like, I know my skin is fair, but don't you worry. I was brought up with a Cook Island family and I know where that respect line is. But I'd always go to my friends' houses and they would just answer back to their parents. And I'd be like, man, I would get like a gender or something.
Never,
like,
you can't even take your parents' name or your grandparents' name. That's even that is seen as disrespectful. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Telling that they are wrong.
Yeah. I know. I understand that. Okay, wow. Going back to the conversion therapy real quick before we wrap up on that one real quick. Because I've never experienced conversion therapy, but I have heard about, you know, people that have instances where they've gone and experienced it. I've heard that people were fed nausea pills and forced to watch gay porn, pornography. Is this the kind of thing that happens?
Well, there's a story of a woman called Joanne who was, and this is an old story, she was growing up and she wanted to be a nurse. And when people found out that she was a lesbian, she was taken to the hospital, not as a student or a nurse, but as a patient. And over the course of the time that she was there, she was diagnosed with a personality disorder, falsely diagnosed, and then given 200 electric shocks for it.
Who diagnosed her? What is this the same hospital that you went to where the guy came up to you and was like, I'm going to pray the gay away?
This is
some crazy hospital. Yeah, that's
this
happening.
Is a hospital in Christchurch. And she's still alive. She's still a lesbian. But then she says that she ended up hating herself. And she's got lots and lots of injuries. She's even got burns on her scalp from the electric shock. And when she tried to take this incident to court, she didn't actually get properly compensated. But then you have this conversion therapy has, of course, changed. People aren't sitting in camps anymore. This is now more like a one-on-one counseling service with a medical professional. And that's where young people are told that, hey, we can rewire your brain if you just write that I'm not gay or lots of other things on like a card and send it to yourself every day, read it every day, read it every morning and night, memorize it. We've also got this thing called evasive therapy, which is what you're talking about, where you associate something really bad or negative with being queer. So if you've heard of Pavlov's dog, where they ring a bell and the dog salivates because you're presenting the food at the same time.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I've heard
the dog
that.
Is salivating because you're presenting the food.
Yes.
You also ring the bell. After a long period of time, the dog will salivate just by ringing the bell, right? Yeah. So basically what they're doing is they're associating something really negative with being queer. So accepting being queer becomes a punishment in itself. It messes people up. But then we have to acknowledge the biggest breeding ground for conversion therapy, which is religious extremists who kind of tell young people and sometimes adults and vulnerable adults as well that God will hate them and they will go to hell if they don't repent. They are also the biggest opposition to banning conversion therapy in Aotearoa. There are groups who are speaking out and putting out real nonsense out there, and they're arguing freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And there is a fine line between religious freedom and religious bigotry, and I say a fine line because too often they are the same thing. Mm-hmm. But conversion therapy is religious bigotry. There are young people who have literally been pushed to suicide because of conversion therapy and because of what their religious leaders have told them. I mean, there's a story of a young boy named Chris in Australia who prayed to God to heal him or kill him because his religious leader told him to do so.
Let's touch on that while you're on that conversation. With the Pride March that you were at and the video that went viral. Honestly, when I watched that, I was clapping you. I was standing right behind you. Not literally, but I was standing behind you in the video. Please explain for everyone that's listening, if they haven't seen the video before, what was actually happening at that Pride March.
So we were at the Pride March, of course, for Auckland Pride, and we were marching from Albert Park to Aotea Square, and the Heart of Christ Ministry sent some of their preachers and messengers to come to our Pride and tell us that God hates sin and God hates sinners, and basically telling us repent. I had been watching them all afternoon. I was there to enjoy my night and celebrate other queer people and the success and to push forward other things that we need to achieve in this country. Yes. And I was watching them all night and I thought, maybe let's not ruin our night. But when we were walking out, this girl walks up to my friend and hands a pamphlet and tells her to repent. Funny thing, my friend wasn't even queer. She was there to support me. And I was like, can I see what this is? And I took it from her and I saw what these people were preaching. And I just had it. And I said, I will not tolerate this kind of behavior anymore. And in that moment, it was a sign of being fed up of the state and of the church and the state, because the police were standing right there doing absolutely nothing to help us. In fact, that they were acknowledging that these people had the right to be homophobic and transphobic at a Pride March. So the state wasn't going to do anything about the homophobia, so I did something about it. I was like, just because you claim to be the messenger of the God doesn't mean I'm going to give you a verbal ass whooping in the name of the Lord. Like, you ain't no messenger of the God. You're the messenger of James Cook, sis.
I saw her and she was like, I don't know what I was going to say.
Girl, just stand there and smile because you look like a damn fool now.
And social, the power of social media that was filmed. And, you know, that I know that wasn't your intention, but I think it is important for people to see.
It was my intention.
for it to go viral, for people to see what was happening.
Not necessarily for it to go viral, but for people to see what queer people have to put up with in this country, because for far too long, Aotearoa, New Zealand, this colonial state, has pretended that we are a progressive country where queer people are free to be who they are. We're not.
Not even at a Pride March.
There were five different incidents of violence against queer people in Pride Month. And you know what? I'm not even sure if we are done. I'm expecting more.
Well, because I've seen as well, you know, there was, I don't know the names, but there was a man that had been beaten up on his way home. I had somebody call the station, the radio station that I work on. They called me the other day and, it was a lady, and she said that her 18-year-old son was walking home with his boyfriend. They were just walking home and he'd been beaten up. Like, this isn't Aotearoa. Like, we are walking with somebody we love and getting attacked.
And you see that straight people who don't show up for queer people when we are being attacked are the same people who will say, why do you need a Pride March? Maybe because why people keep beating us.
Why do you need to express your sexuality so much? Yeah. I get that.
I was like, be gay, but not like that. Yeah. Y'all always creating a traffic every morning. Straight people.
So that video, that Pride March video, what did anything come out of it that you wanted to? Did you get what you wanted to? Like you said you were fed up, you were over it. It got a lot of good traction. People that were, did you get negative comments on it? I didn't go through the comments exactly. I mean, of course you're going to get negative comments. People are always going to have something negative to say.
The negative comments definitely outweighed the positive comments. Oh, yeah. I mean,
is this even on your page?
Yeah, definitely on my page. I mean, because what happens is that homophobic, transphobic people with large platforms normally share my video on their platform and then encourage their followers to go and comment really negative stuff in it.
Okay,
whereas people who support me are more likely to send me messages rather than publicly say these things and get into arguments. And I think people who support me are usually well-reasoned people, so they don't want to get into petty arguments. Whereas homophobic, transphobic people, they're just willing to say whatever they want to say. So they just are the people that have the most comments in my comment section. And I'm not the kind of person to turn the comment section off because I'm like, this is what's happening in this country and this is what queer people are having to put up with. Mm-hmm. If I'm having to put up with it, you can read about it as a straight cis person who is reading the comments.
Wow.
I mean, I got multiple death threats. There was a person accusing me of forcefully sending them my nudes. And so I confronted them.
I saw. Yeah, okay, sorry, continue. Yep. Write that thing down so I don't forget it.
Yeah, someone was on their Instagram claiming that I had forcefully tried to send them my nudes. That did not happen. I confronted the person. They refused to publicly acknowledge that they were lying, but I have messages of them saying, actually, yeah, I am lying.
That is so awkward. What an awkward thing to come up with. No proof, bro. Like,
people in the past have leaked my phone number, and again, people had found my phone number and I was getting phone calls, prank calls as well.
Wow.
Yeah, every time I speak up for queer rights, there are people who quite literally get very violent. This one time there was a note left on my door saying, go to hell, homo.
So they found your address and everything?
Not this time, but in the past they have, yes. But I live at the same place. The person who has been spreading my phone number around probably has my address to spread around as well.
What's your background? Are you do you do politics? Like, is your background in politics? Because I've seen you there, and you're like up on the stand, and I'm like, whoa! So you rule that courtroom. Wait, do you call it courtroom? What do you call it?
The house, the debating chamber.
The debating chamber.
Yeah.
Ooh, fancy. Okay. Yeah.
My background is not in politics. I'm studying a Bachelor of Law and a Bachelor of Arts, majoring in psychology at the University of Auckland. And politics just seems to be a hobby and something that I can naturally do. And I think it comes from being dedicated to my people, because largely I'm not interested in a lot of other issues that goes on in politics. Yeah. But like, there are some things that I truly care for. And when you care for issues, you don't need to understand how politics works. Mm. You just
fight for what you think is right.
Yeah, you fight for the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd be great at it.
And I think politics is missing a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, especially I feel like in, you know, in our community, you'd be great at it. I'd be backing you 100%.
So Mayor of Auckland, all right.
Yeah. Oh, hey, maybe. Who knows? If I see you up there, I'll be like, oh God, I'm a dough at one time. Okay, cool. Hey, Chanel, thank you so much for being on Dough Ad. Anything else you'd like to share with the people before you leave?
I just say that for people who want to end conversion therapy and don't know how, just reach out to our Instagram or Facebook, and if we have something going on, we'll do it. And for the people with money, all right, listen up.
Yeah, go. This is your platform.
As an activist and as a grassroots activist, this movement is driven by people who don't have the resources. I mean, I work three different jobs because I have so many bills and so many fees and et cetera, to pay. We don't have the money to fund these things. We need a campaign. We need to make videos. We need to make signs to put around the city. If you got money and you want to help us, get in touch.
Yeah, what's your Instagram handle? Was that the best way to get a hold of you?
Instagram handle is andconversiontherapynz on Instagram. And then you can also reach out to me at Chanel Lal, but I'm always shadow banned, so it's difficult to find me.
But your email is on there, and that's how I got in touch with you as well, and you're very good at responding to that. So if you've got a lot of money, then don't be shy to jump in the email and the Gmail.
Don't be shy at all.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I appreciate you and all your work, and I will back you wherever I can. Look, I don't have lots of money, but wherever else I can help, I will definitely help you out. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Diaries of a Dyke with Danny Finnessy. Thank you so much for listening. If you need more of a doad dosage, you can follow us on Instagram @Diaries of a Dyke. And I'll catch you next episode. Peace.